Welcome to episode 20 of the Iron Agenda, the podcast about War Machine, Hordes, and whatever else is on our minds. Hey everybody, and welcome to the Iron Agenda, the podcast that's the last stop on the TempleCon Media Blitz. I'm Josh.
I'm Dave.
I'm Pat.
And I'm Andrew Hartland, also known as Hacksaw76.
Welcome aboard the train, Andrew.
Actually, thank you. Actually, it's Andrew's train, I think.
It is his train.
So, and we're actually the caboose, apparently.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, you guys are the caboose. I wanted you to be the locomotive, but I don't know what happened.
That's all right. Things happen. We're just glad we got you on at all.
Yeah, it was the holiday time, so it makes it difficult, but you do what you can.
Absolutely. So, TempleCon.
What's the dealio?
Well, TempleCon is the gamers' con for the East Coast right now, I'd say, and it happens to be, you know, heavily emphasizing privateer press events. I'd just be, you know, that's the way it's been from the beginning. It's always been a heavy tournament scene, and then eventually we came up with Eternal War last year, which I think St. Louis stole quickly for DICON.
We did. I didn't realize we stole it from you, so, but yeah, we do have one.
I prefer the term pillage myself.
Oh, pillage.
Yes.
Did we plunder it?
We plundered it.
Right. But you guys did a little differently. I think you guys included tournament play.
That's correct.
As a points total. We keep it totally casual. Eternal War is strictly non-tournament for us. So those, you know, combination events as well as the involvement of Privateer Press has made TempleCon very popular, and we expect to see, we had about 70 unique players last year. We think we'll probably have right around 100 unique players just for Privateer events this year.
It's pretty impressive. I think for DICON we had just barely more than half that.
I think so. Well, we, on the hardcore day, we did have 34 for hardcore,
like that, yeah.
Plus we had about 15 doing the other stuff. So I think that was our big day.
I think so.
But Hacksaw, how many, what percentage of that would you say are New Englanders? Or how many people travel for TempleCon?
Out of the 70 players, I know that we probably had 20 or so that were definitely New Englanders. And then we extended our reach to New Jersey. Connecticut is sort of a part of New England, but we don't know. And then New York, Pennsylvania, Vermont, and, well, we actually had guys come from Georgia last year, drove. That was crazy. And then people from Alaska, California, Europe. So it's pretty crazy. A lot of people come in for TempleCon for a lot of things, but we think the travel contingent for privateer events is pretty big.
But it's hosted in the great state of Rhode Island, not?
Rhode Island, capital of Providence, is, you know, probably half the state, literally. And the Biltmore Hotel is the nicest hotel in downtown Providence, so it's a very cool venue.
I guess before we actually talk about this year's TempleCon plan, how'd you guys get started? I mean, because apparently this is growing to, you know, quite the convention now. What was the kind of impetus to get it going to begin with?
Well, a bunch of guys who had been doing conventions professionally, assisting and running events and conventions, were, you know, really tired of missing out on some of the congenial feeling that you want to have at a gaming convention. They said, you know, it's too competitive, and we want to do something different. And that's where Grant Garvin and Zyman and a couple of the other people who run TempleCon now decided that if you want to run a convention, why not make it just one entry fee and you can do anything you want for the one entry fee. And that really allowed people to just say, let's do TempleCon. And that made it very relaxed and casual, and literally you're not locked into anything. And I think that's what made it successful, and it's almost doubled in attendance every year. This will be the fourth year, and it's going strong.
So where did you get the name TempleCon? Is there a story behind that?
Yeah, the guys who put the con together had a publishing company, which was for RPGs in the initial inception, called Knights of the Temple, or Knights of the Midnight Temple, something like that. And that led to it being called TempleCon. And they also kind of feel that the convention itself should be treated with a little bit of reverence, you know, not religious reverence, but just
cult-like, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, I hear you.
You guys serve Kool-Aid?
No Kool-Aid, but I mean, honestly, once you've been to TempleCon, you really do look forward to it the next time, and you really immediately start thinking about next year. I mean, the only thing that really interrupts me thinking about TempleCon is Gen Con. And once Gen Con's over, I start thinking about TempleCon again.
Now, I'm never really up on every con that happens, but is TempleCon really the first one of the year?
I don't know of any conventions in January, so I think it really is, because you need a little time to recover from the holidays, and beginning of February, not much is going on, so it seemed to be a good time to do it. It's tough to get people all in one place in the summertime unless it's Gen Con, so February seemed to work out, and despite the weather, people come.
Is there still time for people to pre-register or get a hotel room or do whatever they need to do to reserve their space up there?
Definitely. Pre-registration has been extended to January 15th to get the reduced rate on the convention entry fee. And once again, that covers anything you want to do. Once you have your badge, you can go in there and do whatever you want to do. There's no additional fees for events. And as far as the hotel, I believe there's still a few rooms left in the Biltmore. The full convention block got filled. They requested more rooms, and the Biltmore was happy to do that. So there are a few more rooms available. But if not, there's some other hotels in the outlying area. Downtown Providence has a lot of hotels, so it shouldn't be a problem.
Okay, that's good.
So by the time this airs, how much time will there be to pre-register, Dave?
Well, today, hint and hint, nudge, nudge, wink, wink, is January 8th.
Yes.
So they will have 1 week to register, pre-register. So, Axel, what exactly would they be pre-registering for this year?
Well, when you pre-register for the convention, you're going to have access to the entire event schedule, as I said. But if you want to sign up in advance for events, as far as privateer events, we have several events this year. There's four qualifying events, one totally casual event, and then the championships on Sunday. So the first event on Friday is a 500-point Guts and Gears event, which is Mangled Metal plus one solo and one unit. The second event is Friday night, and it's Midnight Madness, which is a 750 mixed Steamroller 4 with some special rules added. Saturday, during the day, there's Hardcore, and it's a mixed event this year. And then Saturday night, there's Jackson Beast Never Rest. That is the casual event, which is a Mangled Metal, two casters, 750. And then during that entire time is Eternal War, which is you bring three lists, one 500, one 750, and one 1,000-point list. And you just play casual games throughout the weekend. And the top War Machine and Hordes player from Eternal War also qualify for the championships.
So I'm looking at the list here, the detailed descriptions I have in front of me, and really all of these have something pretty unique about them. For example, the first one you mentioned was the Guts and Gears, but you're still allowed to take a solo and a unit. Do people really come expecting these unique scenarios or unique events, or do the people know what they're getting into typically when they come?
I would say so. We do a pretty good job of publicizing what the events are going to be. The way that we do it is through various forums and then through podcasts. And if the people like it, they usually talk about it with their friends and ask questions on the various forums. And then we clarify things as the events are coming up.
Okay. Actually, I have one question regarding the Steamroller tournament. I can't remember where I heard this. In New England, you guys like to use the chess clocks for Steamroller, right?
That is correct.
Okay. Just so people know that they'd be using those rules instead of the standard timing rules going into it.
Correct. Yeah, the Midnight Madness event, which is the Mix 750, will be using chess clocks. And if you haven't used chess clocks before, what it does is you take a total time period. Let's say for a 750-point match, we're going to have a total time period of 80 minutes. The way that'll work is you divide the time with equity between two players. You can't divide it exactly because that will lead inevitably to someone running out of time. Which in the chess clock format means you lose. So what you have to do is you have to make sure that there's kind of a wiggle room between both players of about 5% of the time. So no player should use more than 55% of the total clock. If they use more than 55% of the total clock, they lose because they're going to run out of time.
Now, is that an auto? I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, it's an auto loss. Just like chess, if you use all your time, you lose. We really emphasize that part of the con. We've been running chess clock events for 2 years now, and there's only been one loss by time in 2 years. So
I don't think that it's necessarily a bad thing. I mean, when you think about it, it's actually better in some instances because you can take that one long turn in exchange for going real short on other turns when you're just running.
Right.
But I just thought it'd be important to mention that just in case, so no one was surprised, because it can be a difference if just in feel, if not in actual effect.
Sure. I mean, I can imagine not being ready or prepared to hit the clock after I end my turn every time. So it's something that some people definitely need to be aware of.
Yeah, but we're probably making a much bigger deal of it than it is. But
sure. But this was an example of one of the things that I thought were unique about these different events. You know, the chess clocks, again, you're still timed, so it's not that much different than a regular SR4, but it's still a pretty unique. And am I right in saying it's pretty much exclusive to TempleCon?
I would say so. I know there's other people around the country who've experimented with chess clocks, but you know, we're doing it on a large scale. We're templating, you know, a maximum of 64 players. So we have enough chess clocks to cover that with some spares. And I'd say it's the only convention where you'll see that. I mean, I know privateers thought about doing it in the past, but they don't want to push their format to include chess clocks because it's, you know, prohibitively expensive.
Sure.
I think they're about $20 a piece.
Wow.
But we just made the commitment early to say, let's do it. And it's worked out really well.
I guess I'm kind of curious, have you gotten any feedback regarding chess clocks, especially from new players? And we're kind of tangenting here, but
sure,
I find this to be interesting.
A lot of the people who have done it for the first time find it to be a very natural feel and somewhat of an invigorating feel, because the pressure that you feel from an individually timed turn, as in SR4, is very different than the smooth overall time that you feel. There's almost a bell curve of pressure when you play with the chess clock, because initially you don't really care. You're just, like you said, running a couple times. And then once you're taking your tactical turns, you really start to make that look to the clock and budget your time mentally. And it just makes it feel like a more strategic sort of timing rather than a, oh my God, I got to hurry this turn up timing that you feel in SR4.
I can see that, because, you know, like you were suggesting, in a regular SR4, first turn you're running and you have, 8 minutes left on the clock, and you're done.
Yeah.
So it's sort of not a waste exactly, but it's definitely a different feel, like you're saying. For the hardcore tournament, are you guys going to have anybody from PP running it, or do you have any representation from PP there?
Yeah, PPS Biggie, Dan Brandt, and PPS Kevin Clark, are both going to be attending again this year. They attended last year, and they really enjoyed themselves. So they'll be back, and they might be bringing a couple more people with them. But they really enjoyed it because their job is really just to run hardcore. Kevin runs it with a couple Infernals, and then Biggie plays in it. And then Biggie does Beat the Quartermaster in Eternal War, which is just casual games against staff members, which is always fun. And their only job there is to really just answer questions and hang out with the players. So they love it.
That's good. I bet that's a lot of fun and a good chance for them to hang out and meet people, and as well as for the players to actually meet some of the people involved in the game.
Well, it's good representation from the company. You know, putting their face out there as friendly guys you can talk to, really get to know, and I think that's really important.
Yeah, especially it's not like we're here running the tournament.
Right.
It's
right.
We're here playing with you.
Participating
it's,
along
you know,
with
it's,
you.
It's kind of peer relation.
Yeah, that's the feel they're going for. Definitely they're wanting you to feel as if, you know, you are a member of a community, and they're a member of the community too. They're not moderating the community. They're a member of the community. And it's not that hard to do. Honestly, the age that you see at TempleCon, I think our average player is probably 21 or older. I mean, we have a couple of kids, but it's a very adult convention.
I remember there was a thread for TempleCon, and somebody was talking about whether or not their kid could play in the hardcore or something. And I can't remember how that went. I don't know. I'm just blabbing. It just triggered my memory.
Yeah, actually, I think we're all well over 21 here.
Yeah, yeah.
In this recording as well. So, yeah, us old people can play with War Machine.
The only thing that you have to worry about is how you're going to get to work on the next week, because very little sleep will be to be had at TempleCon. It's well worth staying awake, but you will be very tired by the end.
So I think I read somewhere that there's pretty much 24-hour gaming going on. Is that right?
Yep. Thankfully, TempleCon is not so large that we have to be in a convention center yet. I mean, that might be on the horizon. But the beauty of a hotel venue is that you can run events 24 hours a day. So Eternal War for Privateer is 24 hours a day. There's tournaments going on 24 hours a day, casual games, same way. And then all the other parts of the convention, board games, video games, you name it, they're all 24/7 as well. So it's a very party atmosphere there.
That's cool. Well, you said you have, you're sliding for 64 players in your Steamroller tournament. Is that right? Or is it 32?
Yeah, all the events this year were able to handle 64 players, along with other tables available for Eternal War and casual games. The ballroom this year is going to be equipped with 50 4x4 tables. Those are going to be nice, you know, wooden boards with full terrain on them, and, you know, not just felt. It's actually textured boards with paint and everything. So 50 fully available tables, only 32 of those for tournaments. And then, you know, the ballroom is always open, and then the cash bar will be there, and it's going to be huge.
Well, that's kind of what I was going to ask about. I mean, that's a lot of tables. How long in advance do you guys have to start working on terrain for that?
Well, we have a good bunch of terrain. Last year, we were trying to template 32. But this year, we know that it's going to be bigger, because at least hardcore is mixed this year, and the reason that the hardcore numbers were just 32 last year is because it was not mixed. Of the 70 people that were there on Saturday, that was our big day. I mean, 38 players that were not in the hardcore were almost all Hordes players. So with the inclusion of Hordes and hardcore this year, we know that we're going to get high. So we've templated for 64 players. And then we said, okay, if we do that, we also have to make sure if we do really jump to that 100 that we're looking for, then we need to have other tables available for casual games and whatnot. So that's why we're using 50 as the number of tables.
That's a lot of tables.
It is a ton. What about, say, prize support? Is that a secret, or are you going to have anything in particular to entice people to come?
Well, most of the events have their own prize support. We're going to be using the 1-2-3 coins that have been released this year as a basic prize, but there'll be other prizes available. I mean, there's a ton of press gangers coming to support this event. So everybody's going to have their, oh, I bought this so long ago and I'll never paint it kind of blisters and box sets that they'll bring for prize support. So those will pop up randomly. Midnight Madness, I get store support from various stores across the country, actually. And that's a lot of prizes in that one. Hardcore, they have their own medals that they bring. And then we're giving away a studio-painted Epic Iris during Hardcore. And then Jackson Beast Never Rest, that's the Saturday night event. By that time, people are so tired that they really go wacky with prizes, like buy people dinners or buy them beers and stuff like that. So there's definitely a lot of prizes to be had, but honestly, TempleCon is not about the prizes. We don't go for huge prizes because we really try to just keep it as a friendly weekend of awesome gaming.
You mentioned the Studio Painted Iris. Is that the one that you finagled at Gen Con this year?
Yeah, that's correct. I basically begged, borrowed, and stole from various sources to get that ready for Hardcore Gen Con. And then, you know, afterwards I felt, you know, I was so lucky to get this even on the table that, you know, I should probably give it away and to get the karma back to somebody else.
Well, that's cool. That's nice. Are you going to have one to replace it with? You have another one ready yet?
Well, the last time I'll be using her is in Hardcore, so they'll get to see it. And then once I give her away, I'll have to construct and build and paint, you know, another one. I have it in a blister, but I don't have it ready yet.
Did we say when it actually is?
No, we didn't.
Oh.
The actual date of TempleCon is February 6th through the 8th in Providence, Rhode Island at the Biltmore Hotel. And you can get all the details at www.templecon.org.
Do you guys do any sort of t-shirt design or anything this year?
Yes, we did. We did a big t-shirt last year with the original Privateer Press art on it. Bosun Grogspar was the picture. And that was interesting because it fit the theme of the t-shirt, which is Midnight Madness. He has the no sleeping on the job catchphrase. And that was cool. But I wanted to one-up that this year. So I requested some artwork that had never been seen before to be used for TempleCon. And that request was granted. So the t-shirts this year will be featuring some epic artwork, which has never been seen prior to TempleCon. You know, you can do some guesswork if you'd like, but I'm not going to tell you what it is until I get the okay from Kevin. But needless to say, it'll be, I guess I can tease it a little bit more. It'll be some epic artwork for Metamorphosis.
Nice.
Oh, so it's something that people could actually see in the book.
They'll see it in the book when the book is released. I think the book's supposed to be released in late March. But it will not have been seen anywhere prior to TempleCon. So
well, that's very
it'll be
cool.
A cool t-shirt, yeah.
Hey, you can tell us. We'll stop recording.
I don't know how to go off the record on internet chat.
Does it
don't worry about it.
Morluck?
What about Hagrosh?
I don't know. You can actually get a t-shirt this year. I'm going to actually post the information tomorrow on the Privateer website, how to pre-order a t-shirt. Even if you're not attending a convention, you're going to be able to get a t-shirt this year.
Cool.
And that's in an effort to kind of cover the initial cost of production.
Okay.
I think the t-shirts last year were like $12. So
that's not
we're
bad
not
at all.
Any
yeah,
money.
That's
we're
cheap.
Not making any money. It's just production cost.
That's cool.
That's a great idea just for advertising too. I mean, like I'm obviously not going to be able to make TempleCon this year just with, I'm real busy at work. I can't get out of here. I'm working on the weekends as it is.
Right.
But, you know, if I have a TempleCon shirt that I wear out to other events locally,
yep.
Even if I didn't go, it still gets the word out there.
Exactly. And the people that have them tend to wear them because the artwork is privateer art, so it's very nice.
Actually, I did briefly want to go back, but I'm looking at the list of events and I'm seeing Monsterpocalypse Trashing Rhode Island. This is a new thing?
So that's going to be a short game.
Exactly. It is a small state, yeah.
People say that. Monsterpocalypse is still pretty new to the area. I do not run Monsterpocalypse myself. I'm not one of those PGs. It just didn't turn me on, but it's a good game and a lot of people like it, so we're introducing it as an event at TempleCon this year. It's going to be a 16-player event, and that's been moved to Sunday just due to space concerns on Saturday. But it should be good. It's, I think, one of the first organized tournaments that's not a starter tournament. It's going to be an actual build-your-army type of tournament, and I haven't seen any of those advertised in our area. So we'll see how it goes.
We've had quite a few constructed. I don't think we've had any sealed tournaments here, but we
had one early on.
Yeah, we've had quite a few constructor tournaments here.
Apparently, it's got they've gotten some pretty nice turnouts too.
Apparently, yeah.
Well, I think it's, you know, if St. Louis can do it, we can probably do it because we have a pretty good community as well.
Oh, what's this? What is this?
Isn't our city bigger than your entire state?
Well, I'm in Massachusetts, so that's the case. But St. Louis might actually be larger than Rhode Island. It depends.
Only if you count East St. Louis.
I suppose. That's
I count East St. Louis, baby.
That's because that's where all the strip clubs are.
That's right.
No, I got definitely got to make it out your guys' way sometime to just witness the hordes of St. Louis players because there are a lot of them.
Yeah, we're kind of spread out, but yeah, there are quite a few of us here.
Yep. Hopefully, maybe make it out for Privateer Press Weekend. Privateer Weekend, yeah.
Now, is that the new name for DICON?
No, it's our subset of DICON. That's specifically run by the St. Louis PGs and whatnot.
Yep.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
Yep.
Sort of like a PP events at TempleCon. We don't call it something different, but
you guys
have all the control. Yeah, that confused me when I initially looked at it because it says Privateer Weekend, and it sent me to the DICON website, and the DICON website was really atrocious.
Yes, it is. Well, Andrew, is there anything else you wanted to mention about TempleCon before we moved on to how we hit the events ourselves?
Not much. I'd just say if you're going to come to TempleCon, make sure that you get plenty of sleep beforehand because it's going to be nonstop and you're going to be smiling ear to ear.
No, you mentioned an open bar, but you're going to have an open energy drink bar too?
Well, it's a cash bar, but I know that they have Red Bull at the bar there because a lot of people make drinks with Red Bull. So there's definitely going to be Red Bull there. And we usually have Red Bull girls walking around as well.
Oh, really?
So that'll
all right.
Be-
how much is this con again? Wait a minute.
Yeah. Pat just got interested.
Yeah, wait a minute.
Well, if you pre-register for the con, it's $35, $30 for student and military. If you were to come to the con and register for the weekend at the door, it would be $45. So you save 10 bucks. And if individual days pre-registering, you save 5 bucks. So it's not that expensive, and
there's going to be Red Bull girls. I mean, hey, that's all we need to know.
So well, there's going to be a lot more than Red Bull girls this year. There's going to be dancing girls. Halftime at a hardcore will be dancing girls. There's going to be circus acts circulating throughout the con. It's going to be amazing this year.
That actually sounds kind of cool.
You say it's like going to Atlantic City or something. It's or like, Vegas.
Well, I wouldn't say Atlantic City. Have you guys ever been to
New York? No, I haven't. I was trying to equate that to the East Coast of Vegas. It's like Vegas, but I'm like, you know, you're on the East Coast. Everybody talks about Atlantic City. I just assume.
I can only compare it to Niagara Falls because up in Niagara Falls on the Canadian side, you have a very interesting mishmash of stuff. Like there's a bar which is next to a strip club, which is next to like one of those arcades where you get tickets.
You know, I have heard that about Canada, that Canada's got some of the better like adult entertainment when it comes to that sort of thing. So that makes sense, I guess.
TempleCon gives me so
awesome.
If you've been up there, you know what to expect.
I think I'm going to have to try to go.
Yeah, Andrew, I think you just earned yourself another attendee.
Well, honestly, I mean, airfare is not that bad. Honestly, with the gas prices now, you can probably from St. Louis to Boston get a ticket for $200 round trip. And then if you want to crash, there's always room to crash. But if you want to get a hotel room, Biltmore's a bit pricey. It's like $150 per night, but there's local hotels as low as $50 a night, so it's not that bad.
So $150 for night. How many people could comfortably share a room at that rate?
The convention has the benefit of the suites in the Biltmore, which are either two king beds or one king bed in a suite setup. So you have the main room, which has the beds in it, and then you have an ante room, which has a coffee table, a huge couch, and a couple of, not recliners, but large chairs. And we're talking large, like you look like a Smurf when you're sitting in these chairs, large. So you could easily fit probably 8 people in a room, like comfortably.
Wow. So that's actually not a bad hotel rate at all if you get in there. So,
now, Dave, I had a really lame Red Bull joke I was going to tell. Yeah. The time has passed, but I'm going to say it anyway, and you can put it back in if you feel comfortable.
Actually, I'm going to leave it right here.
Are you?
Yeah.
It makes it even worse, too, because I don't know why I thought this was hilarious. So if you drink the Red Bull and it gives you wings, can you still not fly over deep water?
That is lame.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yes.
I can tell a joke.
No, Pat, you are not allowed to tell your kind of jokes. So looking at this list of events, and lately I've been thinking of not doing too many competitive events, so I'm looking at the Eternal War, something I would probably do. And I have a 500-point list that I think I could take. So the list itself is Warwitch de Negra, a Cankerworm, 2 Death Rippers and a Night Wretch, and her Scarlock. Add onto that a pair of Pistol Wraiths, a full unit of Bile Thralls, Gorman DeWolf, and a minimum unit of Pressgangers.
Okay.
Wow.
That's right. It's a little twist. You didn't expect that, did you, Dave?
Where are the Defilers to go with the Pressgangers?
The Defilers to go with the Pressgangers? I don't know what that means.
I'm just coming out of left field. Figured.
All right. Well, this, in my mind, it builds around what I would consider the classic De Negra assassination list. You know, her, a few Arknodes, Pistol Wraiths, and a Scarlock. Bile Thralls, Arknodes, whatever. The general stuff from Prime, more or less.
So you're not trying to win on scenario here.
No. Well, Pistol Wraiths, I guess, are from Escalation.
I can reveal the scenario for Eternal War if you'd like. I haven't revealed that to anybody.
Oh, yeah.
This will be an exclusive to the Iron Agenda.
Oh, interesting.
So well, let's see if I have a copy of it in front of me.
So it's going to be one scenario all week?
Yes.
Interesting.
I hope Assassination is still
all the Eternal War games. It's Assassination still viable, yes, but let's let you know what the actual scenario is going to be. Dun, dun, dun. I've tried to do an exclusive for each of the stops on the TempleCon media train, so I don't want to. And it's kind of a play on words because the name of the scenario is Providence.
Ah, classic.
That's where
so you auto hit, all attacks auto hit in this scenario?
If you're Harbinger.
No. Oh, okay.
So this will be the scenario at all levels of play. And the cool thing is, like you said, you can just play one level if you want to. 500, 750, and 1,000 are available, but if you say, hey, who wants to play 500, you'll have many people raise their hand, I'm sure. Okay, so the scenario is called Providence. The quote, which is an ironic quote, I'll let you know that in advance, is, I have foreseen our victory. And that quote is from Hierarch Garrick Voyle. The description of the scenario is, armies must have faith that their leaders are chosen by the gods and have the foresight to predict their enemies' actions and counter them without mercy. So the rules for the scenario is each player has 2 flags, which are going to be a 30mm base size. The flags are placed 14 inches from their respective table edges, one on the eastern table edge and one on the western table edge for each player. Flags may not be placed within rough or impassable terrain, adjust terrain if necessary. Flags are not models and may not be covered by models at any time. So, after deployment roll, but before deployment begins, each player secretly selects a flag on his own side of the table as your chosen flag. The chosen flag is key to victory. The other is a decoy. After deployment is complete, both players reveal their chosen flag to their opponent, remove the other flags from the table. So the twist to the scenario is, you choose your flag, and then you deploy, not knowing what your opponent's flag is. So the first player will deploy, perhaps defensively, to guard his own flag, or perhaps he'll feint and leave his own flag totally undefended. And then the second player will do the same. And once you're done deploying, you remove the decoy, and then you try to get to the flag on the other side. So the victory condition is, starting on the first player's third turn, a player wins when he ends his turn in control of the opponent's chosen flag. A player controls the chosen flag when a friendly model with command higher than zero is in base-to-base with the flag when no enemy models are within 2 inches of the flag. Disabled models and Frenzy Warbeast don't count.
And what about fleeing models?
Fleeing models don't count either. And we're going to add a tiebreaker as well, which will be based on VPs within a certain distance of the flags. So that's the scenario.
That's pretty interesting, actually. I think my pistol rates could help me out there, grabbing the flag. Right.
Or at the very least,
holding it off.
Holding it off, yeah.
Okay. Well, as long as assassination, like you said, is still available, I'm a go. I'll take this list here. All right. So, if you ever played against a classic Tenegra list, then this isn't going to be too much different. Now, the Cankerworm is there as a new model, but it's there as a hard-hitting thing that's going to replace your Deathjack or whatever huge, massively damaging entity you had on the table previously.
I think that Cankerworm is about 100 points underpriced.
Think so? That's quite a bit.
Maybe not that much, but that thing is very, very useful for what it costs, especially with Tenegra and Biothralls.
Absolutely, yeah. The Biothralls
I've
here...
I've only played it against it once. And I made sure to kill it early, so
that was a good move.
Wanted to see what it could do.
The Biothralls are there for me, at least, to kind of hang back, actually, and protect Tenegra more than anything else. Send them upfield if there aren't too many threats, because you know nobody likes Biothralls on the other side of the table. But the key to this is, as usual, the Cankerworm can do a lot of damage, but under Tenegra's feet and perhaps a Parasite, the Pistol Wraiths themselves can deal out quite a bit of damage. There's a little extra twist here. That's the Pressgangers. A lot of Krix players don't take their own souls, and typically I don't either, but here I thought it might be a fun way to go. As far as I'm aware, Pressgangers are actually the cheapest souls, living models, I should say, that Krix can bring in an army. Just under Steelheads and Sea Dog Crew, I think. But with six of them, you can first turn, give two soul tokens to each Pistol Wraith. And the idea here is to keep them on the board, so they need to either be boxed in case they run from that first turn kill, or Tenegra needs to be able to, or their leader needs to be able to let them stay on the board. So assuming you have those two left over, you can send your Pistol Wraiths out on the field with two focus each. And when the kill turn comes, that can help them out, obviously, with their boosts. The idea is that on the kill turn, the final, you know, your final assassination run, or I should say the turn before, that you're planning on doing it, Tenegra can then kill the last two Pressgangers for two souls of her own, or have something else kill them within 2 inches of Tenegra. So that way she'll have 9 focus on her assassination run, letting her boost a Scourge if she needs to, boost a Parasite, or whatever she needs to make sure she gets that effect onto the enemy Warcaster, or whatever she needs to do to win. So those are 51 points that could go to something else, you know, another Death Ripper, or upgrading a couple Death Rippers to Night Wretches, but I think it's kind of fun once in a while just to bring my own souls to reap the method of getting and use them at the end of the game.
I think that's a very interesting gambit for a 500-point list.
It is.
Because that's a much bigger portion of your list than
sure.
It is a 500,
absolutely.
It's 750 or whatever. But
I feel with saving a lot of points, say from a Deathjack, putting those into the Cankerworm instead, in my mind, it's sort of a savings, and so I don't feel as bad as spending the points in the Pressgangers in that case. And Gorman's there just to, you know, throw out a cloud every so often and do whatever he needs to do. There is quite a bit of stealth in this list, which helps too. You know, Gorman, the Cankerworm, and Tenegra all have stealth. Pistol Wraiths have incorporeal, so in some cases, it's going to be impossible, possibly just difficult for your opponent to actually hit anything or damage it.
Yeah, I like the list. It's a good idea. The only thing that I see is Gorman. Honestly, he's the only piece that somewhat doesn't fit exactly in my mind. You mentioned him as a kind of a utility piece, but there are just so many ways to kill Gorman DeWolf nowadays.
That's true. I did actually have a problem figuring out what to put there in the end. I wanted to put a Boker in just for another hard-hitting on model, but in the end I decided not to. But I sort of threw Gorman on a whim just because I couldn't find anything else to put in there. Maybe Orin Midwinter, might help out, but with my own spellcasting.
I would definitely go that way. In a mixed environment, I think Midwinter is going to help you more than Gorman, especially against Legion.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's true, yeah.
Anyway, lately I just don't play Gorman anymore.
I actually still play him in a few War Machine lists. Mostly, I feel like I need the Smoke Cloud sometimes with some of my squishier Protectorate casters.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you know, Tenegra already has stealth. She's got a good defense, and she's got 7 focus she can camp on if she's not trying to kill you that turn.
He does provide some corrosion for the Cankerworm, if need be. Although I find that I play him back. He's not going to be near the Cankerworm, typically, for me. Black Oil helps, but again, it's in a pinch. So like I said, I couldn't think of anything really good to put in there. Orin would work, but I don't have a lot of experience with him. So there might be something definitely better to put in with Gorman, but I was familiar and comfortable enough with him to know that I would be able to use him, even though he might not be optimal. But anyway, it's a pretty simple list.
Yeah, it's not a bad idea. He is good against those people that don't ignore smoke, once again, so it's definitely useful.
Right. So, how would you guys rip this apart?
Well, I'd ignore your smoke.
Yes, I know you would.
And his stealth.
Yeah,
and his
stealth. Yeah, exactly.
Okay, I might just eat his soul then for the last turn. I'll have 10 focus.
It depends what I'm playing. Actually, I'd probably wind up taking Protector to this, because I've been playing a lot of Legion lately.
Right.
So, at a 500-point level, I'd probably either have Fiora Feet and set all your bowels on fire, and hopefully the Cankerworm too.
Mm-hmm.
Get some damage out there, and then hit it with things like, I wouldn't use my Devout, but my solos. A solo or two, like Apaldin, Vilmon, or the Seneschal could probably do a lot of damage to that Cankerworm.
Well, in a gaming issue, the first one I ever used it in, we saw how 3 Knights Errant, I think they were,
yes,
trashed it in one turn.
Yeah. Now, granted, they did get the charge on.
They did.
But, yeah. I will probably have the Piper, though, to give something that extra boost to get up there.
Right.
You know, I'm going to be playing Idrians, most likely. It might be tough to fit in a 500-point list, but I might do it anyway, just for the heck of it. And they wouldn't be too bad against a Cankerworm. They do have the Pathfinder, too. And they could also take shots at your Pressgangers or charge them and use Intercept to kind of hopefully kill them before you can, deny you some souls, and hope their defenses can defend them from the pistol race a little bit. I'm not a big bottle rocket guy. I mean, if I'm playing Kriess, I'll have a Redeemer, but other than that, I'm not going to be throwing rockets out and hoping to kill stuff. It just takes too long. You know, Zealots, obviously, especially singing no spells and just kind of getting in your way, that's 84 points that you're going to hate to see across from you.
Mm-hmm.
Same way I hate your Bile Thralls.
Sure.
But, you know, it's pretty much going to be hopefully keep my Devout and my Caster untargetable by spells. Keep stuff far enough away from him to not have a Scourge drift on him, and try and not let you sneak 2 Arknodes back so you can target one with a spell.
Right.
You know, just kind of your standard anti-Tenegra attempts to try and get rid of her.
Mm-hmm.
I probably won't have Ion on a Holt at 500 points.
That would be a boon for me then if you wouldn't.
Because I like to have a lot of troops usually.
Right.
And that's 40 points for 2 models that I probably won't put in because I'll have Vilmon instead. Obviously, they're a better choice against you than Vilmon.
Right, but in general.
But in general, I usually have Vilmon. So the race are going to be a bit of a pain.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to be some focus I'm going to have to throw out there. But I'll probably hopefully try to do it early before you can get the assassination attempt.
And if they are carrying those souls around, those soul tokens around, that's going to make them an even bigger target.
Oh, absolutely.
So they're definitely going to be difficult to keep safe. And they are the key to the whole list, or at least most of the. They are. So what am I trying to say, Dave?
The linchpin?
Yes. For the most part, they are the linchpin of the list.
Pat, what do you think?
And at 500, that makes it even more difficult.
Tenegra's bad. I think there's so much other stuff that's come out that she kind of gets overlooked in some cases.
Yeah.
For no real good reason.
Exactly.
But I've always hated Tenegra. She's always she has always been so good, even with all the new stuff that's come out. I think a lot of the new stuff that has come out has overshadowed some of the older stuff in other factions. But I think Tenegra is one of the ones that really has never been overshadowed by you know, all this new stuff. I've got a couple different casters that I can go with against, you know, Tenegra list to be able to try to see stealth and whatnot. Siege is a good one, but I don't know about this one.
Well, with Siege, you know, if you're talking about ground pounder or even elimination, but even just ground pounder, he needs a 12 to hit her.
I know. Yeah, that makes it hard. I would probably go. I'm leaning more toward Kray just because, like I said, the that one spell, the Mage Sight. you know, that would allow me to use my entire battle group against whatever I can get under that AOE, and that would be pretty key. Now, again, at 500 points, my battle group's not going to be huge, but if I've got two or three models that can, that I can get placed that could get in there and go against those, the harder targets, that would be good. I like you said, I would definitely be gunning for those pistol wraiths, because I've been on the wrong end of your pistol wraiths in the past, especially in a setup like this where they had focus on them.
Yeah.
Or, I'm sorry, soul tokens on them.
Right.
And that makes them, they're so deadly. But yeah, I don't know. I like Kray. Maybe, like you said, a Sentinel. I think a Sentinel would be good for this, because, you know, the nice thing about it is that against Kricks, at least, Pal 10s are actually somewhat effective.
Yeah,
and a lot of it's just you have to hit, and well, that's what Kray can help him do.
Yep.
So if I can get a Sentinel in there, and then maybe I want something maybe with a little bit longer range. Gosh, the Hunter's bad because everything's smaller based, and the Defender's a lot of points at 500. But you know,
yeah. But considering you're making a list that you're going to play against anybody,
that's true.
Have a
yeah,
Hunter.
I mean, I am trying to. I'm thinking solely against this list, but if it's more in general. You know, you'd probably want to build one that's got some, yeah, I'd say like a Sentinel and a Defender might be good. You know, two Jacks to put on a Kray, just in a general sense. You've got one that's long, and then you've got more the short crowd control Jack.
Well, and the Defender could still take advantage of full tilt and his speed, so that's not
sure.
A bad choice.
Yes, yeah.
You know who I really like? Speaking of POW 10s and getting by defense being your biggest hurdle?
So?
Haley. Temporal Barrier slows him down. Chain Lightning can rip through troops.
Yep.
You've got you can throw out a couple arcane bolts if you need to.
Mm-hmm.
To take out the pistol race.
Mm-hmm.
I think that a good sister on sister fight would.
Yeah, I think the fluff wise, I think that's a good matchup too. And I know I've taken Haley against your Denegra on occasion in the past, and it's always been a fun grudge match, so to speak. And they would also she would also pair up with the other element of the list that I would put in there, being that I'm Signar, is trenchers. You're going to have the trenches in there because I'm going to want to try to, you know, keep smoke between me and your badness, you know, at least to defend from some things. The one thing that you just can't defend from is those damn jacks that he's got that can run 14 inches.
Yeah.
And then, you know, your arc node that runs 14 inches right up into your smoke, and then you're yeah. toast. But
yeah, there are several things I could do against trenchers, unfortunately. I mean, I could Death Rage a Bile Thrall, take him out. I could Ghost Walk a Death Ripper and then run it through your lines to make your guys jump out of their trench.
Exactly. You can take them over.
Yeah, I probably wouldn't probably do that. There's no way to lower your command.
You know, the other good thing with them, I mean, the nice thing about trenchers is that since they can shoot, you know, Haley's feet can give them a second shot. So,
yes.
You know, yeah. Hopefully I can get that off before you decimate my trenchers. So I think that's that would be sort of the genesis of the list. I would probably also put the Black 13th in this. I like that unit. I think they would be able to do.
That's an expensive investment at 500 points.
I think it is, and
under Haley's feet.
Mm-hmm.
And what's it called? What's their fire ability called?
That's called Chain Fire, where they get the cumulative +1 to range attack damage rolls.
And what's the base POW?
It's 10.
POW 10.
So you're talking POW 19 in the last one.
Mm-hmm. On Haley's feet.
Yes. Yeah, yes. On Haley's feet.
Yeah, they are expensive, and like I said, it'd be a give and take, but I think, you know, it probably would be worth it, especially in a general, you know, play against several lists. They've got pretty good defense. You know, obviously if you hit them, they're dead, but, you know, their higher defense, that coupled with Clandestine that Watts gives them, could help keep them alive.
Well, you throw a Squire in there, he mage sights the worm, they walk up and destroy the King Worm.
Actually, it reminds me. Is Clandestine the shoot back, the return fire?
No, Clandestine is the
because
that's Prowl.
Because what I'm thinking is a Vile Thrall Purge is a ranged attack.
Mm-hmm. But I have to target one of them.
Oh, that's true. You can target anybody. Yeah, never mind then. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so they've got a lot of fun toys for the unit that I think really probably makes it worth it. You know, try to go ahead and spend the points. But yeah.
What about you, Andrew? You're playing your mercs in this. What do you think about dealing with Negra?
Well, actually, one of the best casters to foil spell assassins and just Kricks in general for me is Fiona. Fiona in a 500-point list with Fiona and a Mariner by that alone is a foil to a lot of the elements of your list.
That's true. I can't knock her down.
I can't knock her down, and with Nonokrien Brand, my Mariner can probably kill both your pistol race in two turns.
Mm-hmm.
And if I miss my Scourge anyway, your Whiplash is going to hose me.
Yeah,
exactly. Whiplash makes Crix players think a lot about whether or not they want to go for it. And one missed spell can be deadly. I mean, whether it's Venom, Scourge, you name it, they're all not good for a Crix player.
So what else would you you add with Fiona and the Mariner?
How would you actually go for the kill?
Fiona puts a lot of, you know, army decimation into effect. I mean, the way that she kills people's army varies widely, which is what I like about Fiona. She can channel her soul fire through her Telgeshmark to take out living infantry. She can take out solos at long range of various types with an Anokrine branded Mariner. There's just really, it's kind of a toolbox approach. So what I'm pretty comfortable with lately is the Steelhead block and also the Nis Hunters. So I think the Steelhead block is 250. Stannis, 10 Steelheads, Halberdiers, and 5 Cav. Plus Fiona and a Mariner would probably be about 400, maybe a little higher. And then, you know, throwing a few solos, maybe a Boker or two. And I just rely on being able to react to your army pretty well. Use my feet to, you know, be very aggressive on one turn and not really suffer much in the way of retaliation. And then whatever's left over gets in and kills Tenegra. In fact, one Halberdier engaging her and one Cav model charging under Rupert is probably enough to kill her, even with focus.
So with the flank and the charge, that gives you a +4 total on the map. Is that right?
Right.
So you really need not much more than an average roll just to hit her once.
Yeah, and with impact and 3 attacks and 4 dice and 3 dice on the subsequent attacks, I mean, I'm probably going to get more than one in there, but if I get lucky, I can probably kill her with one Cav model.
I can see that, sure. And that's, Pat, I might actually, in a moment of desperation, try to Dark Seduce his Cav. If I could take out Stannis.
Yeah.
The other thing that I almost always have in Merc List these days is Lord Rockbot.
Ah, there you go.
So, I forgot to mention him, but yeah, he's probably in there.
Yeah, in that case, I wouldn't be dark seducing anything.
Exactly. He's the ultimate foil to such a dark seduction.
What's his command when he has all his coins?
11.
He starts out at 12. He's a 7 plus 5 coins.
Wow.
That's huge. Especially for his speed 4.
Yeah, it's easy to keep one Cav model back and be within 12 inches of him.
Okay. All right, Josh, sounds like you have your work cut out for you.
That would definitely be my easy choice.
Absolutely. Yes, my work is cut out for me. But the Necker, she can do whatever I want. She can handle anything, Dave.
Sure, she can.
I was going to say, I'm thinking more like I have my work. I think we have our work cut out for us, but it is Tenegra.
Those Bile Thralls tend to go down pretty fast.
Well, but like you were saying, Clayton, if you're keeping them back, though, you know.
Well, it depends what, you know, it's going to be depending on what's on the field.
Sure, that's true.
Death Rage and a Bile Thrall is a beautiful thing.
I just know that there's, you know, I'm looking at this list and I'm seeing a whole lot of high priority targets for myself. And it's like, where do you start?
Feels like a Legion list.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's the one advantage with Fiona is that I do not have to prioritize against your arc nodes because I almost want you to try to shoot me with spells.
Pretty much, yeah. In that case, I might resort to just using him as slam missiles if I can. If I slam the Mariner and it leaves contact with her, she can still be knocked down at that point. But
she has sea legs too. So
oh, does she really? Well,
yeah. She can't be never mind. At all.
Yeah.
Well, see, I was thinking the Mariner for Lash. In that case, what else does the Mariner bring that would be good? Just the AOE or?
Well, the Mariner brings screening, and then if I have what's it called? There's another spell I forget the name of right now that adds an additional +2 defense against magic attacks.
Oh yes.
And then if you miss and the Mariner's within the spell, you're also going to take D3 damage.
Ah, that's right. It is a pretty good little combo.
So are you going to be playing any events? You actually going to bring Fiona out, or are you going to be running stuff, Hacksaw?
Well, I'll be running Midnight Madness. That's my one event. But I'll also be hanging out in Eternal War on the first day before that. And I'll basically be a ringer. So I won't have a sheet with me, but games that you play against me will count. So that'll be there. Midnight Madness, and then I'm going to play in Hardcore right after Midnight Madness.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but you actually had some success in Hardcore last year on very little, if no sleep.
Yeah, I actually won Hardcore with Epic Magnus on no sleep. I'd been up for 36 hours straight.
Wow. Were you the Zen of Epic Magnus?
I was going to say, you know, he was so tired that nothing could touch him.
Pretty much. It was really the perfect list for that type of situation, because there really wasn't much to think about. I really only thought about, how am I going to shoot this guy with two Renegades and two Mariners in one turn? And that's all I ever looked for. So the rest of it was just,
that's about all you need.
Distract him. Yeah. Distract him. Let Lethargy expire on a Renegade and then shoot him with everything else. And it worked every time.
All right. Speaking of Legion lists, I went ahead and put together a Legion list.
The Legion's bigger dozen?
Actually, I went for 750 this time, so I have a few more than 13 models.
Sure.
And I used.
And what would you be playing this in? The Eternal War as well?
I would go ahead and either play this in the Eternal War or in the Steamroller.
Okay.
This is a slight modification of a list that I played at the last tournament we played in a game on. 750 Steamroller there. Now that the Duststalker's out, I kind of tweaked it a little bit. But I've been playing some Epic Lilith lately, trying to get her down, make sure I've got my head around her, and I think I have at this point enough to play her in a competitive event. I brought with her a Shredder and a Nephilim, which was originally a Carnivian, but I downgraded it to make some room for some other stuff. Bring a pair of Seraphs, a Feralgeist, a Forsaken, because Lilith only has 5 Fury, and a Shepherd for the same reason, extend that control radius when it's needed. Also have a packet of Incubi, and I have two Deathstalkers and the Strider unit. I would make room for the unit attachment, but I don't think it's going to be out in time for TempleCon. Full Archers and their unit attachment, some Swamp Gobbers, and the Bone Grinders. And this list is pretty much a I'm going to try to shoot you list, in case you hadn't guessed that by the number of arrows in the list. Pretty straightforward. Lilith is going to try to have the Bone Grinders put their Craft Talisman on her. And then she is going to walk up and feet on all her army as much as she can. And if she can, put Pincushion on your Warcaster or Warlock. And then her, the Striders, the Deathstalkers, and the Archers who have Arcane Fire and Poison Arrows, if you're living, try to shoot you until you stop moving. And the Seraphs fill in if they have to.
Feralgeisted Seraph?
If necessary, that's what it's there for. Yep. I liked the Carnivian in this list originally because under her feet, it gave me 5 melee attacks without spending Fury. It was just a really good melee beat stick if there was a hard target I had to kill in melee. I downgraded it to a Nephilim, not so much for the melee slice and dice, but the fact that it's another slam model. And it does have a decent range if it has to charge, you know, with glide and with its speed and, it can charge 11 inches over models and has reach. So, if necessary, you can get that last hit in.
Okay.
And that's pretty much it. It's straightforward. I can shoot into your deployment zone at top of turn 2. So, if you leave me line of sight of your Warcaster, and you're not camping on so much focus that I can't hurt you, then that's my plan.
Mm-hmm.
And, the Swamp Gobblers are there to block line of sight a little if I have to delay a turn or two to get a better position. I don't like to do that. I'd rather just go for the kill if I can.
Right.
But sometimes you can't do that. And Lilith has a really nice defense, but she's got no armor. She can't take a hit.
Right.
So that's pretty much it. Incubi are my only main melee troops.
Mm-hmm.
And they're only going to pop out if you get in the melee with something else. But they can do the job. I only need to hold you off for a turn or two. And that's it.
All right. I'll give you my thoughts with Craig's. I've actually played against a similar list with this, with Terminus. And that list, you had a Carnivian. I don't remember how many Seraphs you had. Did you have both in that one? So it was a more or less a similar list.
Yes, it was. No Death Striders.
No, but you did have
Death Stalkers.
Right, but you did have the Striders.
Mm-hmm.
And with Terminus hoarding all his focus, say, atop of turn 1, he's going to have 24 armor. And it's going to be hard for you to really get past that.
Oh, it took 2 or 3 turns to get through him.
It did.
Only because I was able to get Pincushion up.
True. And I don't think I even had all my focus at that point. But, you know, even with a 21 focus after he does a death.
Annihilation.
No, but damn, what's this one?
Talking about his AoE?
No. He's it every other day. What is that thing called?
Demoniac?
Yeah, the tough.
Shadow of Death?
Thank you, Shadow of Death. Oh my gosh. So even if he's using Shadow of Death and he has the armor 21 after that, that's still hard for you to get over. Pincushion,
sure.
On average, lets you maybe get a point or two in. But if he decides to hoard his focus, have a Scarlet put Demoniac on him, you could run up, slaughter your best, or if you're going to have your starters up that close, you can run up there, possibly scare them away, possibly get some souls from those guys, even if he does have to use Annihilation. If he uses the terrain right, he might be able to work his way up slowly to Lilith. He's going to have to worry about the Nephilim for sure, because he'll charge in and do some damage. But with wings, ignoring free strikes and all this.
He actually has Glide.
I meant Terminus.
Oh, I'm sorry.
But with the Tattered Wings, he can ignore the free strikes from your Nephilim or whatever it is to get up to Lilith, possibly, again, scaring away your Gobbers or your Striders. And what else did you have that was not fearless?
Oh, pretty much the Archers are not fearless.
Archers
and,
are in there, sure.
And the Bone Grinders.
Bone Grinders. So over a couple of turns, you might be able to make one of those runaways, which would be a huge help, especially if you can get rid of your Concentrated Volley with your Archers.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have the UA in there?
I did.
The poison won't do too much to me because I'm not going to have too many living models, but still, ignoring the screening and whatnot to, say, kill my Scarlock, that could hurt. But I would say Terminus, walking up, getting souls along the way, spending as little focus as he can to hoard his armor as he gets up there to kill Lilith in hand-to-hand by himself.
High armor is definitely a problem. The way I had to get around it was Pincushion and Saris, right, because I could boost.
I should also point out that he's not only going to be swinging a sword every turn, he'll be breathing his fire.
Oh, sure.
Which might be able to, you know, take out a guy here and there.
Or more than that.
Oh, sure.
Yep.
So that's my thoughts.
Okay. Let's go to Andrew. Andrew, what do you got?
Well, actually, I've played against Epic Lilith a couple of times, and as a mercenary, I have a lot of living models, so, and they're mostly squishy models, so it's a really tough matchup. So I think I would have to go back to TempleCon 2007 and bring out the Epic Magnus list. Two Mariners, two Renegades, and first turn would give me a lot of distance for my AoEs to go and really shred that Archer unit. Shred that Strider unit, even not hitting, I can still take out
Strider. Absolutely. Armor 11, it's paper.
And I might even throw in a Raining Steel for good measure. So if I can get first turn, that's a lot of AoEs. And if I, you know, even if I half that Archer unit, it's so much less effective. And with the armor of the Jacks being 18s for the Renegades and 17s for the Mariners, you know, you still have to combine two or three archers to do damage to those, so I think that would be fine. And Magnus would be chilling in the back with misdirection on him, so I think that would be a pretty effective list.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that's pretty much this list's problem, is I can't go through but hard targets. Mm-hmm. I can't take down four Jacks and a Warcaster before I lose everything. So I've got to either try and draw line of sight to Magnus, hopefully, or I'm done.
Yeah.
I mean, Lilith's ideal situation, parks herself behind a forest, where she can't be shot by the obliterator rocket. Damn you, Dougal McNeil. And, you know, plinks through it. But, you know, she might be too far where she can't get to Magnus.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I think that'd be a very tough game.
Yep. Get anything, Pat?
Well, yeah, I think I'm gonna go along the same vein that I did with your Denegra. I think I'm going to try to take Kray
against this. Large base.
I it's a larger base, but the problem is, like you said, is I've got to be able to hit you. And
absolutely.
Now, does this iteration also have the Isle of Sight?
The Seraphs do.
Okay, so you're still Nephilim, so taking trenchers are not going to help me really in any way.
They're going to prevent my archers from shooting and my Striders, depending where they are. Yeah. I mean, that's a lot of shots.
But I'm thinking, like you said, I've essentially got to go after Lilith and try to kill her before you kill me.
I'll tell you one trick though, real quick. To mention smoke, and this is something I've done in another game. Archers only have to line of sight to part of the template they place. I'll place it so the template edges just out of the smoke and reaches back behind it to catch some trenchers if I have to. And that's, you know, that's legal, and that's a good way to clear out a couple. That's not going to make the smoke go away, but mm-hmm. I can still do a little bit through it.
Yeah.
Now, if you put that smoke out to max distance...
Then I can't.
I don't think so. I can reach you.
It'd be six inches.
I might catch one or two.
Tuck it in between the clouds, but yeah.
Oh, yeah, I guess you could. Yeah, that's true. But anyway, I'm thinking, and again, this since it's 750, I can take a little bit more, so... I like, I'd take Kray. I probably would put the Thunderhead in because I like the Thunderhead with Kray. It can do some nasty stuff.
But the boosted attack rolls.
It's a big heavy jack that you've got to go through.
In that kind of case, I mean, like you said, it's a big heavy jack, but if that's your only heavy, I will try to slam it with the Nephilim if I can.
You still might be able to take care of your Striders before that ever happens.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. So the Thunderhead probably a defender, or maybe either a defender for the range shot, because I want to be able to shoot Lilith. Or like a, you know, like a heavy, like, man, probably old rowdy, something like that.
Honestly, a Grenadier would do really well. Those AoEs.
That's true. Something, yeah. But yeah, I want to put a wall of metal out there as well. And, you know, something to hide behind. The trenchers maybe could help screen Kray from, you know, because he has the large base. Or I could do something like the Storm Lances. You're talking, at this point, we're adding up a lot fast. So I don't know. Again, I think the Black 13th would be good here too, just because I could see things with them. They can shoot you. And they've got a pretty good rat. So chances are what I shoot at, I will hit. And especially like against those archers, I would love to throw I believe it's Ryan's chain attack over your little band of archers and just drop a POW 14 on them and say, bye bye.
I might actually have to use my feet to kill them with my extended range so they can't shoot me back.
You know, proper placement though of stealth, so you might have to do it with Seraphs.
Uh-huh. Or the concentrated volley.
Or concentrated volley, sure.
But yeah, I mean, because I can't get too close to you and shoot you because you'll shoot me back.
Yeah. So I think that's how I would go against this. And and the reason it took me a little bit to do this, I have not played against Epic Lilith, so I have very little experience against Hordes, period. So you start throwing this against me, I'm like, man, I'm looking at that going, wow, this is tough. These are my thoughts as to how to deal with it.
I bring Lilith because I want to play her more, and I finally just finished painting the model. So I would bring her mostly for that reason, but she pretty much is, I would say, a one-trick pony. She does that trick extremely well. But stuff like, you know, Josh said, you know, there's easy counters. High armor. I can't get through the high armor, especially in a non-living warcaster. A wall of metal, like Andrew or you could bring, would just get in my way. So, really, it's kind of like a paper, rock, scissors game. You know, if she's a rock, if your opponent happens to bring scissors, you've got a really good chance. But if they bring paper, which somehow repels rocks, then you're done.
I was just thinking, you know, I used Crix, my War Machine faction, as my example, but with Circle, you know, we've taken Epic Kai versus Epic Lilith before, and it was a pretty close game. It was that spam game we played.
That was regular Lilith.
Was it regular Lilith?
It was.
That's right, the subsequent game was with her. But either way, just taking Epic Kai, and I wouldn't even have to take all 12 of my Argus, Dave.
You could, though.
I would probably do something else, but given the fact that she can give stealth to herself and all her beasts, would hinder a lot of your shots.
Absolutely.
Except for the Seraphs and the Concentrated Volley. But being able to teleport and get up to you, even if you're behind that forest, is not out of the realm of possibility. Now, you're probably going to have her by herself. You don't plan on putting her next to too many models, I don't think.
She usually keeps around the bone grinders.
That's true.
Because they need to be able to craft Talisman on her before she moves for her assassination run.
So if you have a couple of models maybe hanging out of there, that would help Kaya with Against the Odds get the beat on her. She's, what, a demon 16? Probably 17 with tenacity. Mm-hmm. So again, you know, I would need an 11 minus 1 for every extra model. That's not bad odds. Again, just considering getting extra attacks there, boost every so often. She's got low fury. She's going to be low in fury. If I leave your beast with a lot of damage, I might be able to take her out.
Yeah, I would definitely have to sack a Seraph, you know, just throw it out there to kill Laris. Mm-hmm. I have to.
He's got
to
die. Yeah.
Even if I have to feet to do it.
Sure.
Because then Kaya loses her maneuverability.
Yeah, and that cuts my assassination run in half.
Absolutely. But that's not necessarily easy to do with good placement on your end.
Because he is going to have stealth with whatever her stealth spell is now.
Yeah.
And,
That's why it's going to have to be the Seraph. I mean, the archers can't. The Striders, maybe, if they run up there and CRA it.
And the thing is, Laris can be so far away from her, because I don't need to run him within 5. I need to get him in a position where I can slam him or throw him to get him up closer enough within 5 inches of her. So, you know, I need him to be 19 inches away at most. I can even have him farther away from me, too.
Yep.
So.
Bad doggy.
He's a cool doggy.
Yep.
Andrew, do you have a Hordes army at all?
Currently, I do not. I used to play Scorn, but I just found that Mercs were so appealing to me at the time that I wasn't playing anything. I also have Menoth, but I haven't played them in over a year. So I'm trying to finish my Merc experience, and then I'll probably go back.
Did you pick up Scorn because you like Magnus and Mercs, or did you just pick them up because you like them for other reasons?
Well, I think it was a little bit of a natural choice that I liked Magnus and he was working with the Scorn, but I also saw them as somewhat of the army-style army, you know, an organized ranks type thing, and I like that idea. What I didn't know when I first got into them is the level of detail on the painting. It made it really tough to get deep into the ranks of the Army, so that stalled me. And it stalled me just long enough to get into Mercs, so it was a sad story for the Scorn.
I hate painting Knights Exemplar for the same reason. All their armor has those ridges on it. Mm-hmm. And luckily for me, that's only a couple of units. For the Scorn, that's everybody.
Yeah, definitely it makes your painting take that much longer if you want to like make it look good. Does Pat want to throw in his two cents as to how he would approach TempleCon? Not necessarily a list, but what he might like to play?
Well, you know, it's funny. I was just thinking this because in a lot of these discussions where we talk about strategy, I always am throwing out Cray because, you know, he has one thing or another that seems to be...
He seems very versatile.
He's pretty versatile. Yeah. And he's very helpful to his army, be it Jax or units. He's got something that will help them. So I believe that I would put together a list. I would try to put together lists based on Cray. And the other reason for that is I haven't played him much at all. So I need to play him more and get my head around how he works and how he would perform in the situation. So I think I would try to put together a couple lists, you know, like 500 and 750. I probably wouldn't play 1,000 because I'm too damn slow, as we all know. And now you know too, Andrew. But I'm not as fast to put a list together on my feet. But like I said, I think sort of the list that I've talked about with Cray is something that I would go with for this. I think that would be fun.
Have you played the Black 13 yet?
I have not. I only played them in that one game against Ray. Mm-hmm. There's the Ray mention for the episode. Thank you very much.
You got to get that in there.
So no, I honestly, other than just looking at, I was actually reading over there, that page while we were talking about them for the last few minutes and redrooling because they really have a lot of tricks that they can pull. And mm-hmm. again, it's one of those units, there's so much to that unit that, you know, that they can do. So, and they're very helpful, like for both of those lists, they're going to be helpful because there's a lot of stealth. There's a lot of, things that I've got to be able to shoot, and they can do it if I can get them up there and keep them alive.
Well, if you come to TempleCon, you could hang out with Jeremy Galini, who is Hate on the Privateer forums.
Yeah. Oh, uh-huh.
He's the Signar mentor, now Infernal, who knows all things Signar, and he could give you the ins and outs of the Black 13th from every direction, I'm sure.
I keep wanting to call his name Height. Looking at it on the forum.
No, you know, it's how is it spelled?
H-A-I-G.
H-A-I-G. Yeah, I remember that.
I remember in a thread he was talking about, and maybe you'll know what I'm talking about, Andrew. You were talking about him bringing back his painted epic Nemo.
Actually Rawtooth. Rawtooth is the Alaskan player, he won the epic Nemo that was painted by Rod Cruzy. So he's coming back this year, and he's going to play an epic Nemo army in one of the events.
Because people kept asking him, am I going to see that epic Nemo, that particular epic Nemo?
Is that the one he won by beating the quartermaster?
Right. A lot of people got to play against Big E, and Big E thought that Rawtooth thrashed him the most soundly, so he awarded him the epic Nemo.
Well, that's good. Make the trip from Alaska worthwhile.
Yeah, no kidding.
That's going to be one heck of a flight.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's 18 hours or something like that.
Wow. That's dedication.
I wonder if he can see Russia from his house.
Maybe. But, Pat, I'd say that if you bring Cray, you could play him at several levels in Eternal War. So Eternal War would be a good testing ground for him.
Yeah, I think so. I like that. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to disappoint.
If you do well enough, you could qualify for the finals and play Cray in the finals at 500 points. And that's the funny thing is throughout this episode, you guys were mentioning, at 500 points, it's really tough. And that's the reason we made the finals 500 points is because it's really tough.
Yeah, I've mentioned this before in different episodes, but I really, really like the 500-point level because army composition is hard, mm-hmm. and I really like that.
Yeah, and it's funny that, we've said the same thing before, but we started playing 500-point lists, and then we thought, we don't really want to go up to 750, and then we finally, just in the community, when we start playing with other people in this community, we bumped it to 750, and I've never gone back. I prefer 750 because, like you said, it is easier to get all the more of the things that you want in there. And it's because of that, the difficulty or the challenge of getting what you really need in a 500 list that I just don't play it as well. I just don't care to play it too much anymore.
I like the fact that, the finals of TempleCon is a smaller game.
I think that's a great idea.
The thing I don't really like it about Gen Con where you go up to 1,000. Yeah. And where, and then it is partially, combo. The better combo. I like the fact that you have to build a solid list that can do maybe one or two tricks, but you still have to execute those tricks against another force that is also small and compact and well formed.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I think that's a really good idea.
From one discussion we had, you know, 500 points is, you know, the harder right, where 750 points is the easier Epic Vlad.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yes, that's the truth.
So, Andrew, you have a special announcement?
Actually, yes. I feel a little bit guilty making you guys the caboose on the TempleCon Media Blitz train. So, out of the goodness of my heart, I have decided to actually award a TempleCon t-shirt to one of the Iron Agenda listeners via a little bit of a contest. So what I would like to do is I'd like to have all the Iron Agenda listeners send an email to contact@ironagenda.com with your guess as to what the TempleCon t-shirt artwork will be. It doesn't have to be correct. It's just the way you enter. And then you guys can do a drawing, and then I will deliver the t-shirt to you, and you can announce the winner. And that will probably be arriving before TempleCon, so the winner of the contest will know the art before the players at TempleCon.
That's pretty cool.
That's nice.
That's really nice.
I can't tell you how much we appreciate that.
Yeah, so, thank you very much, Andrew. Yeah.
You're quite welcome. It's going to be a great time, and anything we can do to get TempleCon out and about on the backs of t-shirts and players who can talk about it across the country, it's getting bigger and better every year, so... maybe we'll see you guys there next year.
We had a few. Hopefully. We had a handful of people here talking about doing a road trip. I don't know if that's going to go on or not. But
there was someone on our forums too asking us if we were going to have a chance to go out.
That's true. It was it one of the SOBs? I think I can't remember.
I think so.
Or one of the guys from Jersey, I think.
Yeah, but this year it's just not going to work out for me. Hopefully next year we can do more cons. Or well, this year.
Yeah.
Next year.
It would be next year.
Yeah.
This year we'll think about it for next year.
It is finally this year.
Oh, so.
That's right.
Year, yeah.
I was tired of saying TempleCon's going to be great next year. No, for this short one-month time period, I get to say TempleCon's going to be great this year.
Nice. Okay, we'll go ahead and leave that contest open until the 24th. So shoot us an email at contact@ironagenda.com with your name, your address, your shirt size, and your guess as to what you think the artwork's going to be. And that way we can quickly turn the shirt around to you and hopefully have it to you a week before TempleCon. And you can be the cool kid on the block.
Does this mean our other contest is over, Dave?
I think our other contest is over.
All right. I guess I'm going to be eating those wrap snacks all by myself.
Yep. We may or may not send a bag out with a shirt for no reason.
Oh, that's true.
There you go.
And we'll send it anywhere. So there are no restrictions.
And that's courtesy of Hacksaw.
Courtesy of Hacksaw 76. Yes, thank you, sir, very much.
You're quite welcome.
And thank you for coming on and talking to us today.
We do appreciate it.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
No problem. It's a lot of fun to talk about the tactical side of things. PR is often just fluff and marshmallow, but now today I thought we got a little bit into the graham cracker crust.
Awesome.
Somebody was a Boy Scout.
For a couple of years.
Well, we wish you guys good luck and have a good con there.
Absolutely. And hey, maybe we'll have you back on, give us a little rundown on how it went afterwards.
Sure.
Not a problem.
Awesome. All right. Well, everybody, thanks for listening. Send us in your entries, and we will see you next time.
Have a good one.
Talk to you later.
To contact Iron Agenda by email, send your message to contact@ironagenda.com. To send a voicemail, dial 206-333-0983. Iron Agenda is copyright 2009 by its hosts and released under the Creative Commons Attribution No Derivative Works 3.0 United States license. Opening and closing music provided courtesy of Joshua Salter.